taking me someplace loud and numbing. You're getting me out of here. You don't have any plans, do you?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 1, Episode 20, Peanut Butter and Jealousy. And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Okay, it wasn't until Dave said it that I realized this, the title is a play on peanut butter and jelly.
Wow.
That's so dumb.
I mean, I got it. I just thought it was stupid. It's no,
it
it's a totally happening life, but it's pretty bad.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi.
Shall we get into it?
Sure.
All right. Let's start with our C plot. Allison takes Billy to the ball, but doesn't make him feel like Cinderella. We open with a montage of Billy getting dressed up in his formal wear, but getting flummoxed by his French cuffs. You cut a shot of this for the visual aids. Did you want to talk about this a little bit?
Sure. This won't take long. There's an expression saying that pretty much everybody looks great in a tux. Not true. Mm-hmm. Moving on. Mm.
Okay. Don't yell at me, but Allison's silver sequin dress does not feel that dated to me. Your thoughts?
No, I agree. Her hair is a problem, but 90s.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, her hair is just boring, I feel like. But yeah, mm-hmm. the dress is not bad.
Yeah, the dress is hot. She can really wear clothes. So yeah, she looks good.
She can, it's true. You can see, obviously, all of this in the visual aids. So she small talks with Jake, who seems to be present just to make an accurate assessment of the situation in clip two.
Oh, this is like prom night. But instead of embarrassing myself in front of my peers, I get to embarrass myself in front of LA's advertising elite.
Well, taking Billy won't help.
I'd like a tattoo of the last part of that clip on my face. I think it'll come in handy the next couple of years. Oh, Jake. 2020.
So, at the ball, would it surprise you to learn that Andrew Hsu is bad at dancing? Because he is. I made a gif of this. The first shot that we see of him and Allison on the dance floor is a fast number. And she's doing fine. And he really just seems like he's bouncing up and down, like with his forearms kind of barely hinged to his elbows. He looks like one of those like little limber legs dancers that you like make dance on a board. Yes. On your knee. That's what he looks like.
He kind of always looks like that from the waist up because he has like exactly level, extremely wide shoulders.
Yes.
He just is a board.
Yeah.
To which arms were attached.
Yep. But Allison seems to be having fun. At least during a fast number. She's even having fun in a slow number until he tries to get too close, putting his cheek against hers, and then she seizes up and leaves the dance floor. He tries to explain this move away by saying sometimes you want to bust out the Arthur Murray moves. Okay. And then Lucy comes over and Allison makes introductions in clip three.
Lucy, the Lucy, most incredibly talented woman executive on earth.
Well, he's too charming to be the married one.
No, I'm the roommate one.
Roommate. Allison, you continue to surprise me.
Oh, not that kind of roommate. I'll explain later.
Don't you get tired of explaining? Same conversation. We're platonic. We're not boyfriend and girlfriend. We're not brother and sister. We're not gay and we're not weird. We're just roommates.
She seemed to like you.
Was there ever any doubt? Have you been worried all night that I was going to embarrass you?
Billy, this is about survival, getting through the night.
Yeah, and I heard that the best way to do that is to relax and have a good time.
Wrong. It's a work event.
Well, also, like, Lucy is the one that made that weird. If Billy were her boyfriend, Allison would have said, he's my boyfriend. Like, roommate, I feel like the platonic friend roommate part is implied.
Yeah. Like, it's not the 70s. People had platonic roommates.
Yes.
That's weird.
Of opposite sexes.
Yes. Shut up, Lucy.
Seriously. So then that conversation is interrupted by the arrival of Allison's crush, Danny, calling her Eleanor again. This time she corrects him on her name and he apologizes, saying that he got stood up and introducing himself to Billy with his job title like a real cool dude. Allison tells Billy who Danny is as though his calling her Eleanor wasn't a tip-off. Danny asks Eleanor to dance and further cucks Billy by giving him his plate of shrimp to hold. Which you can see in the visual aids, by the way.
Oh, it's so good.
And apparently they dance long enough for Billy to ditch the plate and get a drink to hold while he watches them creepily, which you can also see in the visual aids. Allison notices and comes over trying to be nice. It's last call, Billy says, if she wants anything. Turns out what she wants is to go to an after party with Danny and without Billy. She frames it as everyone who's anyone's going to be there, but still, ouch. Billy tells her to go ahead and she pecks him on the cheek, saying he was a great date. And when we next see Allison, she's in a suit, clearly dressed for work when she goes into Billy's room. And he asks how it went last night, so we're supposed to think this work event happened on a Sunday? Okay, sure. Like all work events do. Anyway, it starts badly when she says the after party wasn't much fun because everyone just talked about work and he snits that there's nothing worse than someone who's obsessed with advertising. Meow. She apologizes, saying she didn't really think it was a date since there's just friends. I guess not best friends this week. Either way, Billy pissily agrees that they are that, just friends. But doesn't deny that he's pissed about the way things ended when he did her a favor and she ditched him. And they then have a dumb argument about going to Jane's surprise party together, but separately, but we will get to that. And after the party, Allison tries to get Billy to talk to her about defining the parameters of their relationship, rudely imposing the conversation on him while he's watching TV. He is not interested in clip four.
Now, what happened was you went to the ball, you saw your chance to get laid, and you went for it.
Where on earth did you get that idea?
Hey, you were more attracted to him. You're not attracted to me. I'm not attracted to you, so don't sweat it. Guess old Danny boy just couldn't close the deal, huh?
Oh, this is so interesting. So exactly how would you close the deal, Billy boy?
Oh, you really want to know?
No, forget I asked.
No. No!
First
please
of all,
no!
I'll fill you up with my fudge peanut butter cookies. And then maybe I'll pick out a little U2. One, your favorite song, You and Keith, evokes some passionate memories. And maybe my famous monkey impersonation.
No! 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 No!
Women love a sense of humor.
Oh, is that what that is? I gotta give Courtney Thorne Smith a ton of credit. She really is acting like she finds this very amusing and possibly yes. Hot. Like, which, yeah. How could you? Literally, how? That is some acting. Yeah. Well done, lady.
Indeed. But at this point, they are both so sexless that even when he has her pinned under him on the couch, she's just laughing and he doesn't like so much as try to kiss her. It's, you know, they're real platonic. Like, it's fine. Should have stayed there. Oh, well. Moving on. To our B plot. Sydney finds new ways to irritate Jane around her birthday, plus Matt and Rhonda. There was poor nowhere Matt. Else to put them. They don't have a lot to do. Sydney is hanging around Rhonda's apartment while Jane takes Rhonda's measurements for her wedding dress, and they discuss whether she should wear a veil. Jane is pro both veil and train, since supposedly Terrence is very traditional. Sydney says that Jane had a train long enough to put passengers on, and Jane ignores her, also recommending sleeves. But Sydney pipes up again to say that sleeves are out. By the time it's in a magazine, it's passé. At least that's what Kay says. Jane suggests a plunging back. Sydney overrules that too. Given that Jane is not acknowledging Sydney at all, I don't know how it happened that Sydney went over with her. Like, I don't get how she got there. Like, you know what I mean? Just mechanically. Did she just follow her and Jane didn't tell her, like, I'm doing this alone? I don't get it. It's so dumb.
Yeah. Or she, like, had things to carry and Sydney offered to help and then wouldn't leave. Seems kind of Sydney-ish.
Perhaps. So Sydney says that Jane forgot to measure Rhonda's inseam, but when she goes to try to take the tape measure, Jane coldly says she has 3 weeks to make the dress. So would Sydney mind fucking off? I added the fucking off part. Sydney was just trying to be helpful and chirps out. whereupon Jane crabs to Rhonda that she has to be more patient with Sydney. Rhonda thinks that siblings are the only people we can piss off without consequence. And Jane recaps that Sydney is up her ass at work and at home. Rhonda and her brother always used to be at each other's throats. Now they only talk at required family functions. Jane doesn't want to end up like that, but Rhonda thinks sometimes there's no getting around it. So then Jane comes home during a rainstorm to find all the lights out and candles lit in the bedroom and Cindy grinding on Michael in bed, except it's just a nightmare.
For now.
She wakes up with Sydney next to her in bed, looking like she's trying to seduce Jane, to be honest. You can see this in the visual aid. She's in like a slip with a men's shirt on top and like filing her nails. It's very sexy. But anyway, Jane overslept. Sydney already called Kay for her. Kay's not going in until later, so everything's fine, but Jane still panics and leaps out of bed anyway. And in the kitchen, Michael's on the phone quietly making plans for a surprise party for Jane. Sydney comes up behind him and suggests Kay's studio's location instead of Shooters, which will be full of strangers. Michael doesn't want to involve Sydney, but it's the 11th hour and he's desperate, so he relents. And Jane comes in on the end of Sydney hugging him in thanks and then gets freaked out because of her dream. And because Michael's claim that Sydney's effusiveness is due to his having made breakfast for her is so unconvincing. And I kind of have to put this here, too. Matt nicely suggests that Rhonda is changing as a consequence of her relationship with Terrence and all his wealth. And she claims that once she's done planning the wedding of the century, she'll go back to being her down-to-earth self. Maybe. We won't see you. But.
I know. Not that we'd know either way. Yeah, that is a... He does have a line where she's like, oh, you know, don't worry. Like, it's still me. We're still going to be friends. I'm like, uh-huh. Sure. Cool.
So later, Sydney's just loitering around the office bothering Jane. And yet when Jane asks her to go get lunch for her, Sydney says she prefers to be near the action. To be slightly fair to Sydney, she was not hired as Jane's personal assistant. Annoyed, Jane tells Sydney to go kiss some butt or whatever Sydney is there to do. Ooh, butt. So risque. The next day, Jane comes home from a jog and misses Michael hiding her birthday cake under some laundry. While she was out, she realized she has to ask Sydney to leave immediately. But because of the party, Michael has to try to talk her out of it. Also, it's Saturday again already. Jane recalls how Sydney had a heart condition when she was a kid and milked it to get what she wanted out of everyone in the family. Jane's point seems to be that Sydney fundamentally hasn't changed since then, but Michael tells her to give it a day and Jane agrees. And we learn the plan is for Sydney to take Jane to Shooters and then lure her to Kay's. The time is 7 sharp, so Billy must not be late because he's bringing the cake. And at Shooters, we are reminded that Sydney has had resentments about Jane for their whole lives, too, in clip 5.
This is what we should have done right away, right from the start. Girls' night out, just the two of us, just to talk. You always did that when you didn't agree, but you had to. You never changed, Jane.
Neither do you, Sid.
Sure I have. Maybe that's been our whole problem. You still think of me as this little kid.
Sydney, your whole life, you've been able to do whatever you want. I was always left with the wreckage. Mom, Dad, and I.
3 against 1.
No one was ever against anyone. You just had this way. And you still have this way. And if you really want to know, it's starting to get in the way.
My fault again.
I'm not saying that.
Jane, you're blaming me for everything that's not working in your life.
I am not blaming you.
Come on, you don't think I hear you talking to Michael? You smile to my face, and then you dump all your real feelings behind my back. The reality is you can't accept how well I'm doing, or even that I'm doing well at all.
That is not true.
Yeah, then why can't you just be happy for me? Why does there always have to be this tension?
Because I think you're trying to steal my life. Yeah, that's what I think. I think you've always been jealous, and now you see some kind of opening.
I'm that terrible?
You picked this fight. You deliberately provoked me.
You provoked yourself.
This was obviously a mistake. I'm going home.
So there's a second where Sydney considers fixing it, but then she stays where she is and just smirks about it, which, you know, the surprise is ruined, which is honestly fine because Jane's outfit is fucking hideous. Sarah, you cut a picture of this for the visual aids. Please describe.
Yeah, I called it the La Brea Arthur collection. It's this like large rose and beige print floral polyester almost turtleneck short sleeve top, and then these shapeless and yet knife pleated beige slacks I just don't get it. This is a designer and it's her birthday. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's bad. Maybe this is part of the problem for why Michael also looks so bad. His outfit is so sexless. You can see this in the visual aids, too. He's in like a button down under a crew neck sweater. He looks like he's going to a high school dance. Like he's just, it's everything about his look projects. Don't look at me, which, you know, he's a married guy. Fine. But anyway, we see him at the party. He's freaking out about the time when Billy arrives with the cake. Right after him, Sydney arrives alone, shrugging unapologetically that she and Jane had a fight and Jane's not coming. So Michael goes to find her. And when he brings her back, of course, the surprise is ruined because he had to tell her about it to get her there. She's touched anyway and hugs a couple of her friends before pulling Sydney aside to order her out of the apartment by the following night. She and Michael will even pay for a flight back to, I guess, Chicago. And Sydney, snorting, thinks it's because she blew the surprise, but Jane says it's because they don't get along. She doesn't want to fight anymore. And Sydney says Jane won't have to wait until tomorrow not to see her. And sure enough, the next day or later that night, hard to say, Sydney is packed and is on her way to the door when Jane comes out of the bedroom. Sydney wrote a note so she could leave without a lot of fanfare. She can't believe she let Jane walk out of Shooters because she wanted to ruin Jane's party and couldn't resist a chance to hurt her. She's always felt inadequate in their parents' eyes, but Jane says it thinks it doesn't matter since they are who they are. And Sydney wearily says their parents will be thrilled to hear she flunked out of another college, but she's not giving up on a career in fashion. Jane offers to drive Sydney to the airport, but she says they've done enough. Billy's driving her in his cab. Oh, right, Billy. And at the very last second, they exchange I love yous and they hug, and it's actually kind of sweet. I made a gif. And poor Matt is trying to do his crunches while Rhonda harangues him into talking about her engagement. And under duress and in his Morrissey t-shirt, which you can see in the visual aids, sadly, under his
buddy.
Horrible haircut, Matt admits his problem is that he's too scared to find somebody for himself, and he's scared of losing Rhonda. She's scared too, but they won't lose what they have. They pledge. She'll be happy if he's happy for her, and of course he is. He asks if she's got a best man yet. She thinks he means Terrence's, but of course Matt is suggesting something that is commonplace now, but that Rhonda has never heard of. Opposite sex attendance! He wants to be Rhonda's man of honor, and she loves it, and it's on. Aw, that's sweet.
Yeah.
On to the A-plot. Jake has a hard time staying away while Joe and Mr. Joe work out their shit. Jake is, for some reason, at Billy and Allison's place while they're getting ready to go to that ball and spying through their window while Joe goes up to her apartment. Allison asks an expository question and Jake obliges by telling her how he ran into Charles by the mailboxes in the last episode. But when Allison says that Joe must be freaked, Jake admits he hasn't told her yet. And upstairs, Joe listens to her answering machine and has no reaction to a rejection on a photography job. She opens the door to Jake and exposits she's actually had 6 rejections today, so she's very eager for Jake to take her out and get her mind off things. He tries to say they should talk, but she tells him that's not on her agenda for the night, and he lets her hustle him out. And at Shooters, she's complaining some more about her bad meetings, oblivious to Jake's obvious tension, until he finally orders her to shut up and blurts that he saw Charles, and Joe immediately feels unsafe even staying in the bar. And back home, she's babbling explanations for why she didn't tell him she and Charles are still technically married and gasping that he should have told her right away that he saw Charles. And Jake said he wanted to, but then doesn't say why he didn't, probably because the reason is that it was the end of the previous episode. But anyway, the conversation goes on. Clip 6.
Do you realize he's been looking for me since the moment I left? What am I going to do?
I told him that you don't live here.
Oh, yeah, that's not going to stop him.
Then I'll stop him.
But Jake, you don't understand. We had 4 years together, and some of those years were pretty good. It's never all bad.
You left him. You ran off. No notes, no calls.
Yes, I did. It was...
easier?
I think you better leave. It's my problem, Jake.
You know where to find me.
After he's gone, Joe calls someone, identifies herself as Beth, and asks whoever she's talking to where Charles is staying. So guess where Charles is staying, guys? No, seriously, guess. Did you guess? Did you
Eclipse?
Guess the Bellage? Because it's the Bellage. Joe has dressed up and done her hair like Nancy Reagan to go meet Charles in a lobby bar. taking a sip of his drink, he tells her it's soda water, but she wants to know how he found her. As I said in our last podcast, you would think this rich dude would have hired a PI, but it was easier than that. He just asked her dad. And he tries to get Joe a drink, but she just came to tell him explicitly that their marriage is over. Clip 7.
I realized that my departure from New York was abrupt, but I was scared. I was in a panic.
This isn't just for show. I've stopped drinking, Beth.
It's Joe now. Again. I really can't stay.
You know, when I discovered you'd left, I was crazy. I was out of my mind. I wound up passed out in the park. Next day, I checked into a rehab. The Mosby Clinic. I remembered it from a brochure you'd shown me. I've stopped, Beth. Cold turkey. These guys at the rehab, they made me realize how many people I'd hurt with my drinking. People like you, the people that were closest to me. And part of my therapy, my recovery, is to heal those old wounds if I can. To find those people that I've hurt, and if nothing else, to apologize. Look, that's the only reason I'm here. I'm not here to win you back or to take you back. I'm just here to say I'm sorry for what I stole from you. Listen, I'm just in town for a few days. Beth, would you have lunch with me? Just lunch.
Just lunch is such a funny line for an act out.
I know. Oh, get some chicken salad. You've got a lot to think about.
Yeah. God. So the next day, Jay comes out to the courtyard just in time for a distracted Joe to spill all the prints out of her unzipped portfolio. Maybe this is why you're not getting jobs, genius. Anyway, Jake immediately tries to mansplain her current situation to her in clip 8.
I was thinking, you know, there's things you can do. Injunctions, quick divorces.
Well, I went to see him last night. At his hotel. And it's really confusing because he said he's quit drinking. He admits it's a problem, which he never has before.
That's why you're confused?
Well, no, what's confusing me is that I can't be married to someone for as long as I've been married to Charles and just not give a damn. I can't just walk out and say it's over.
Who's asking you to?
Jake. I care about you. I really do. But this is my past. This is my problem.
I don't get what he thinks he can gain from this. Also, like, does he not remember her having to sell a ring like 4 episodes ago? Clearly, Charles has more resources than she does.
Also, they're married. Like, just take your hand out of that crazy and find something else to think about.
Yeah. So over just lunch, Charles comments that Joe's escape must have been hard without money or credit cards, and she lies that she's making a living as a photographer. He apologizes for not taking her photography seriously during their marriage and trying to make her into something she's not. And she tries to use that as a springboard out of everything in clip 9.
If I forgive you, can we just put an end to this and get on with our lives?
Yeah, but it's how we go on with our lives.
Separately. How else? I made my decision. I left.
I think it all stems from this deep insecurity that I was never good enough for you.
You never thought of that.
No, I did.
No, Charles. Drunk or sober, you are never insecure.
Well, I know this. I never could believe how fortunate I was. And the truth is that most of our marriage, I didn't think I deserved you. And maybe I didn't. Beth, we've got to get past this.
Don't you understand that I have a new life? A life that I like?
No, I see that. And I'm happy for you. Look, I'm leaving town on Sunday. So I was thinking if you weren't doing anything this afternoon, you could show me around this city. We always talked about coming out here. Hey, doesn't 4 years together at least buy me an afternoon?
I feel like sometimes these shows like stumble backwards into actually good writing about stuff like this. And this is a good example where, like, in their first encounter, he was telling her how he's sober. Now he's in recovery. He's like on the apology step. And in this point, this conversation, she's like, I'm just trying to get away clean. If I forgive you, can this be the end? And he just keeps pushing it and pushing it. And you realize, like, underneath it all, she has to keep saying yes, because she doesn't know what's going to happen if she says no.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, we will find out, and it's not great.
Yeah.
Spoiler. Her instincts are right. That night, while Billy watches TV, Jake paces and panics about not having been able to reach Joe all day, and we hear this, clip 10.
Cutting yourself crazy isn't going to accomplish anything.
I hate this. I can't push her. I can't even give her my opinion without blowing it. Oh, it was going so good, too. I mean, out of nowhere, I finally meet someone I think maybe could be it. I haven't even slept with her.
You haven't? You?
Speaking of stumbling into things by accident, I think that was Andrew Shue actually getting off a good line reading, not realizing what he was doing.
Yeah. But even if he ruck-setted that, it was still funny.
Yep. So Jake thinks that after all the women he's ghosted, he probably deserves this treatment from Joe. But suddenly there's movement in the courtyard, and Jake orders Billy to shut the TV off so he can eavesdrop on Charles and Joe. And they must have amazing hearing to be able to make out a conversation on television that's happening 5 feet away on the other side of glass. But it starts friendly and ends even friendlier as Charles leans in for a kiss and Joe cooperates. And later, Joe tries to explain to Allison how conflicted she is about Charles now that he's back and apparently no longer a drunk. They're going out again that night. Jake shows up and Allison reports that Joe has a gallery on the hook to show her photos. Jake wants to bring Joe to the surprise party, but Joe says she has other plans and doesn't elaborate. And Jake tries to act like he's not devastated. And Allison makes a funny, okay face that I made a gif of. And after he's left, Joe adds, as if we didn't know, that the Jake issue complicates things further. And Joe advises Allison never to go out with someone in the building. LOL. At the party, Allison finds her old study buddy Jake and tries to buck him up about letting Joe find her way through this shit with Charles. Describing his feelings for Joe, Jake realizes he can't stay away from her for one more second and takes off to interfere. Whoops. Allison tries to reason with him in clip 11.
Can't do this.
What's he doing?
Why not?
He's doing it. Who?
So what? You're gonna walk in there and punch him out? Get down on your knees and propose to her? Jake, she's had years with this guy. She can't just end it by running away or by saying it's over. You've got to give her the time and the space.
My motorcycle says no. So back in the good old Bellage lobby, Charles and Joe are having another friendly conversation when he asks whether there's someone new in her life. She stupidly tells him about Jake, adding that it's different with him. No more. There are more rough edges. Charles shows off his steady hand to prove he's not jealous. Joe is moved and Charles winks at her. And then Joe is walking along the poolside as Jake swims angry laps. She figures he couldn't sleep. He thought she would be spending the night with her husband and resists her attempts to have a cordial chat until clip 12.
You're angry.
Yeah, I'm angry. I spent 3 days doing nothing, sitting on the sidelines, not saying anything, just letting it happen. Because that's what everyone, including you, told me I should do. Sit on it, Jake. Don't push her, Jake. I'm sorry, I can't do that. That's not who I am.
I've been thinking about you. And I've been worrying about you. And I'm scared to death that I just fell in love with someone. And I'm gonna lose before we get started.
I shouldn't have come down here.
I'm glad that you did. Fine. Hey, that's it. Fine. You just walk away.
What do you expect me to do?
What do you expect me to do? Just sit back and watch you slip away? When you came here, you told me that what you wanted to do was rediscover yourself, that you wanted to see if you could make it on your own. And now what are you doing? As soon as things get complicated, you run right back to the exact same thing that
you came from. That isn't fair.
Tell me about it.
Jake, go to hell.
Oh, boy. Guitar solo. No, that
also was not anyone's best thespionics, in my opinion, but...
Agree. So later, Jo is awakened by a pounding on her door. It is Charles, who shoves his way in, obviously drunk. I mean, bravo to him for navigating a spiral staircase while completely shit-faced, if I'm being honest. It's precarious. He goes stalking through the apartment, clearly looking to see if Jake is there. But even when he doesn't find Jake, Charles screams in Jo's face about her screwing around with Jake when she and Charles are still married. Clip 13.
You leave or I'm calling the police.
You slept with him, didn't you?
Didn't you? Probably the first night you got here. Just another way to get back at me.
That's it.
Damn it, you owe me for what you put me through.
Let me go.
You are ungrateful and you're selfish, and this time I'm not gonna forgive you. Walking out on me, the embarrassment with our friends. I don't know where she went. She just left. No, 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 nothing! I was humiliated!
No! 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 Get out of here! Get out of my life!
I mean that. You need me.
You need help.
Think I give a damn what you think about me? Beth, you're not even worth it. You know what? You were nothing before you met me. And now you are nothing again.
So he doesn't actually hit her, but he shoves her around a lot. It's pretty rough to watch, even what we see.
But it's also paced extremely bizarrely. It's almost like it's a musical or like a video.
Yeah.
Like that he'll sort of shove her and she'll shrink down in a corner and then there's like a guitar sting and then the music cuts out. Mm-hmm. And then there's these, I mean, this is not a good actor. Neither of them is really, but he in particular is terrible and not good at acting at all, much less drunk. And then there'll be another set to, I just kept thinking of that notorious fight in that Sopranos episode, Whitecaps.
Yeah.
And how the rhythms of it were very awkward for TV, but very realistic. And this is an example of it done poorly.
The opposite, yeah. Yeah, fair. So when we cut outside, Jake is already on his way up to check on Jo as Charles comes out to leave. And Jo tells Jake that she's okay and orders them both to leave her alone, going back in and putting the chain on her door. And miraculously, Jake lets Charles go get a cab without punching him, perhaps because trying to hail a cab on the street in LA is its own punishment. Little regional humor for you. Charles is the next day checking out of Bellage when Jo storms up to say she's filing for divorce and getting on with her life, and he owes her this chance. He thinks she's going after his money and rudely counts out some of the cash he's just been handed by the desk clerk, because it's what he pays all his whores. And she happily takes it and gives it to a bellman, saying Mr. Reynolds is a big tipper and not much else. Oh, but did you think that Jake getting a new motorcycle would mean it was in good enough repair for him not to have to work on it in the courtyard? That's cute. No, of course, that's what he's doing, as Jo flirts above him. Now she is ready to take Jake's old one and also tells him about the divorce. Jake is obviously psyched, but just as obviously trying to play it cool. And she appreciates all the room he gave her. It'll be a while before she's ready to commit to someone else, and he's fine with it as long as he doesn't lose his place in line. And he sends her up to her apartment with a smooch. Thank God. Goodbye, Charles. This was not fun to watch.
No.
All right. Let's close it up by naming our MVP.
Michael?
Yeah, Michael put on, who knew he had it in him to be considerate enough to throw Jane a surprise party.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, fair. Michael. Hmm. Least valuable player.
Oh,
Chevy drunk Charles. Bad man.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Honorable mention to the senior Andrewses,
mm-hmm.
who raised a brat and a boar. Good job, guys.
That's it.
Next time on Again With This, Dave, play that clip. Fucking finally, girl. We will have to wait another week and some other bullshit happens with the blind date for Billy and Rhonda and Terrence fighting over a house, but who cares? Amanda. In Woodward We Trust, all others can check out the visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This on our website. That's againwiththispodcast.com or on our Twitter account at AWT90210. Or throw on a pair of mules and clop on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm the Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is sibling rival Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Ruined Surprise, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.